Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Electricity Programme at the OIS. My name is Michal Maidan. I'm a Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. I am delighted to be joined today by Dimitra Apostolopoulou, who is a Research Fellow in our Electricity Programme. Now, we're here today to discuss a paper that Dimitra has co-authored with Rahmat Poudineh, titled Unlocking the Flexibility of Residential Consumers in Low-Carbon Capacity Markets. The paper, alongside all of our research, is, of course, available on our website, but you are getting the preview and the discussion around it today. So, Dimitra, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, and looking forward to our discussion.
So, Dimitra, electrification is something we talk about a lot, of course. It's a key pillar of the energy transition. There are numerous challenges associated with it, and this paper deals with one of those challenges. So let's start by, I guess, a broader question to frame that discussion. What is this challenge? What is resource adequacy? Why is it so important now in the context of the transition to low-carbon electricity systems?
Thank you, Miguel. So it is true that as we're going towards a low future carbon systems, there are several challenges. And as you say in this paper, we focus on one of them, which is resource adequacy. So resource adequacy has to do that all of your generation resources can meet your aggregated demand. And the reason resource adequacy has become more challenging in the energy transition is because of two main reasons. So one of them is that we see lower electricity prices. So electricity markets have been designed so in order for the lower cost units to be dispatched first. And as a result, when you have low carbon resources that are usually zero marginal cost, they are the ones who are being cleared in the market. And obviously they move the prices to the left in the market process. So you have lower electricity prices. And also units that have high marginal costs, such as gas units, that are necessary for resource adequacy, are not being cleared as often as they used to. So they see also reduced revenue. The second is that regulators put a price cap in energy markets, so then we don't have any market power issues. So this price cap obviously reduces the payments to all generators that participate in the market. And that is what we call the missing money problem. So because of these two reasons, resource adequacy has become more challenging in the energy transition.
So essentially, to make sure that I've got this right, the low-cost problem is a problem for the generators, not for the consumers, right? Because listening to this, I'm thinking it's great for me that I've got lower-cost power, but it's a problem for the generators in the system.
That's true. And when the generators don't see a lot of revenues, then they might, not leave the generation mix, as we say. So then consumers have something to worry about, because when you don't have resources to meet your demand, then when you need it, you're not going to be, when you turn on the lights, you're not going to see bright in your living room. So consumers care about reliability, and reliability is connected to the capacity. However, consumers cannot really understand capacity per se, but they can actually experience reliability. But that also is what we're looking at in this paper, is that consumers should be able to express their reliability needs, and that can be translated into their capacity needs.
So this is presumably where capacity markets come into it. And so how do they come into the story?
So capacity markets are a means of providing additional revenues to generators. So if we take a step back, originally we had energy-only markets. So in energy-only markets, they were supposed to provide the signals for optimal short-term operations, as well as incentivize the need for long-term investment. But for the reason we just talked for low electricity prices and the caps that are being imposed by regulators, then they don't actually provide the required signals for investment. So that's why less generators invest, and then we might have a problem in resource adequacy. So the solution to this problem is provide more revenues to generators. And one methodology to do that is through the capacity markets. So capacity markets provide revenues to resources in general that are there to provide capacity and not necessarily energy, okay? And specifically, capacity markets are quite widespread, and they have been used in the UK, in Europe, in Australia, in the States.
Can you talk us through then some of those existing capacity market designs that you've just mentioned? How do they function?
So it's quite similar to like the energy market that has this what we call market clearing process. So you have the offers and the demand. So from the offer side, you have resources that submit their offers based on their unavoidable costs to be kept available. So if you have like an old unit, that could be some maintenance cost. If you have like a new unit, that's the capital investment costs. This offer is obviously, you have to subtract the revenues that resource would have from the energy market, just, you know, to make it fair, obviously. So resources make their offers. And then the question is, okay, what is the demand for capacity? And that's the unique point in capacity markets. So resources do not actually make demand bids, but demand is being determined by like a central body that is usually the transmission system operator that has, you know, a load forecast and wants some reserve margin and says, okay, this is the amount of capacity I need in my system to keep my reliability levels in what I think is acceptable as a central body. And then, so you have your demand, you have your offers, and then you clear your market. So you have your price of capacity as well as the final quantity of capacity determined.
And why is that not good enough? Sort of what are the shortcomings of those markets, and why do we need to tweak them or to alter them?
So the main problem I see in capacity markets now in their current design is that, you know, as we said, demand is not being determined by the consumers who are actually the ones that, you know, experience the outages, potential outages. So this reliability levels is being determined by a central body, whereas the consumers who are the ones that are experiencing, you know, the, as we said, the outage risk are not able to determine the capacity that they want. Okay, so that's the main problem. And then the other problems we have for capacity markets is that these were designed for like traditional generators, as most of the electricity market designs. So they don't kind of favor the participation of like newest resources, what we call like storage units or demand response or distributed generation. And that has to do with their regulation. So they don't have, for example, the locational component. So like, you know, capacity on, I don't know, the north is like needed more than like on the west, or they don't have flexibility. Flexibility is very important in future low carbon systems because you have renewables that, you know, can have like some output now, but in the next moment you need another resource to compensate for them if the sun is not there. So flexibility is another thing they don't really value as they should current capacity. And the temporal relationship between resources is not given the attention it should, because traditional generating units have different characteristics. So there needs to be some modifications in the current designs to make it more fair for all resources to be able to participate, because we need all of them to be fair, both traditional like gas units and demand response and storage units.
Interesting, because when I think about the energy transition and decarbonizing the power system, I think about, as you just said, increasing supplies, right? There's so much talk now globally about adding renewables, adding the storage, even adding the physical grid capacity that we need in order to decarbonize our power systems. But as you've just been saying, and as you point out in the paper, the capacity markets, obviously they offer a way to provide a revenue stream for generators to be able to do just that. But there is also the part that I guess we talk about much less, which is demand and demand response. So talk us through the role of demand response in resource adequacy.
So if we think about future systems, you know, we think about them full with renewables, okay? And we cannot really count on renewables at all times unless you overinvest in like a very large amount of renewable resources and storage. So, you know, because we need high reliability levels in general. Okay, so that's very expensive, obviously. So the other way to think about it is, okay, instead of investing in more generation resources for like a few times, let's say in the year, I'm going to need it. How about I have this methodology of incentivizing consumers to actually reduce what they are asking for in these times? So then I don't need the extra capacity in essence. I reduce my demand. So then the overall capacity I need is less. So that's what we call demand response, where essentially you're giving financial incentives to consumers to modify their demand whenever you need it. Okay. And imagine like if you have to like, you know, you have a wind farm and you obviously have some fluctuations. And if you want to like balance that, if you invest in a gas unit, that's quite expensive. But the other way is to couple it with a demand response unit, and then it's a lot less expensive. Then you just need to follow your wind generation and use your demand by modifying, let's say, you know, your electric vehicle charging. So then you have your desired like kind of smooth outcome. And what is quite promising for demand response, so it has been used many years. You know, the first demand response program has been back in the 60s. But like now, it can be more widespread due to the like communication infrastructure we have, all the automation mechanisms we have, and because people, I think, have become more aware, you know, that we have to go green. They do care about their carbon footprint. You see people not flying because, you know, they don't, or thinking about the amount of times they're going to fly, or taking the train or their bike. So I think that's quite promising.
It all sounds really promising, as you say, and quite easy. And obviously the cost of living crisis has made people more conscious about their electricity bills. So what are the barriers to demand response? Why aren't we seeing more of this?
So the barriers are, it's a very complex problem, okay? It's when you put the human element in any problem, you know, it spans from like the technological side, which, as we said, which is now better because of the whole advancement in communication. But it's also the political barriers associated, as well as some structural barriers. The main barrier that we have to kind of overcome with education and people becoming more accustomed to that is that residential, especially customers, are going to withdraw from a demand response program if, you know, it's too inconvenient for them, okay? On the other hand side, industrial customers, because they're, you know, they're larger in size and they have dedicated systems, they do participate in demand response. So I think the challenge more is in the residential side compared to industrial. The political barriers is connected to the capacity market design, if you want to think about it, that the reliability levels that a consumer can choose is actually determined not by him, but some as regulatory body, you know. And that goes back to the capacity market design and the capacity demand curve, which is determined again by a central body. So we need, though, to move away from these sort of barriers, and we need to move away from that generation has to follow demand because of, you know, reliability concerns, that demand can follow generation, and that's the future. That's how we can achieve a low carbon system in a cost effective way.
So can you give us some examples or some thoughts about what can be done to increase residential demand response?
The way I think about it is that you can go two ways. Okay, so one is that you have a very complex kind of pricing system for your consumers that, you know, they can see, let's say, the real-time pricing for electricity, but they don't make the decision, but like some aggregator makes their decision for them, and or they, you know, they send them a text or can you now do this, and, you know, they get paid for that. So that's one way of thinking about it. And the other way of thinking about it is that we can design some sort of simple contracts for residential customers, but these contracts are economically efficient, so they do have the desired impact on the electricity markets. But the main element is that they're simple and people can have the control of their consumption, which is very important, so they're not intrusive. And this is the way I think is the most promising for residential demand response uptake. So one way of doing that, as we discussed in the paper, is through this priority pricing contract. So which, again, in theory, this idea has been there for a while, but now it can be enabled because of infrastructure that is there and the technology. So the idea is that you have, let's say, you know, three levels of reliability. That, let's say, the green reliability level is that you have electricity that can be interrupted whenever. The orange is that you have electricity that, you know, sometimes can be interrupted. And then you have the red, okay, I never want to have my whatever consumption be interrupted. And then what the consumer does, it chooses like devices in the system that, and then maps them to each of these colors, let's say the green, the yellow, and the red. So, for example, they would put red in their like router for their Wi-Fi, in their heating, in their lighting. They could put green in, let's say, their EV charging, you know, or maybe more in their like washing machine. You know, I don't mind if I do my washing now or like in 4 or 5 hours. So by assigning devices and then consumption to different reliability levels, then we have the flexibility that we need. So when you have generation scarcity, you have all these people that have assigned in a green contract, and then all this demand can be shifted.
It's really interesting. So what would that look like for, well, you and me? Would I have an app in which in the setup I determine which of my appliances would be green, which would be red and orange? Would it be sort of, what would it look like and how would it work in practice? It does sound a little bit complicated to deploy, I guess.
Yeah, so it could be an app, or it could be like a, you know, a home kind of router for your system, and you would make that choice once. Okay, you would always be able to modify it, but you wouldn't have to like constantly like look at your app. And that's the benefit of that you're not actually responding to like real time electricity prices, but this is being done for you by an aggregator. That's the thing. Like, you know, the impact that each one of us would have is kind of small in an electricity market. So then that's where an aggregator would come. Okay. So the aggregator would have like a, you know, a large collection of residential consumers on this, what we call priority pricing contracts. And then it would aggregate all of them and would participate in the wholesale market. And what we discuss in the paper is that they participate in capacity markets, okay? And this is like a case study we're analyzing of how would the capacity markets be, you know, changing with this sort of, how they'd be affected with this priority pricing contracts.
Interesting. And so what would the impact be then on the retail markets? You sort of say that the aggregator would be in charge of I guess, determining how everything would get dispatched or to implement the contracts. How would that impact the retail markets? Do you have any thoughts on how it would impact prices, but also reliability?
Yeah, so, okay. So the aggregator would, let me answer first to your last question about the reliability. So the aggregator would participate in the capacity markets with aggregated contracts. And the interesting thing, and that's what one of the key messages in the paper, is that in that way, the consumers would be able to determine the reliability levels they're willing to pay for. Okay, so that's one very important thing, because that would increase the economic efficiency of the entire system. However, as you very clearly point out, that could affect the retail market. So what is a retail market? You have me as a consumer, I have a retailer. They have a forecast of what I'm going to consume, so they go buy energy. Okay, if I suddenly decide to change my behavior, they would have a problem, you know, that would be inconsistent, and they would have to pay for it, which is a problem. So if I have a priority pricing contract, I would change my behavior. So the solution to this problem is that the retailer is no longer responsible for to match my energy for the times I'm using my priority pricing contract, but the aggregator is. So in this context, in the paper, we are outlining what is how this framework can be actually implemented and without creating any problems to the existing kind of structure we have in electricity markets.
So in the UK, and just to bring it, I guess, back home, in the UK or in the Europe, who are your retailers and who are your aggregators?
Yeah, so the retailers like you know, UK Power Networks is like the people your bill comes in, okay? Aggregators are like, you know, Octopus Energy could be an aggregator, and they have done a lot of work on like, you know, EV charging. they have smart contracts for electric vehicle owners, and they have like several kind of schemes. So it is, you actually see it happening in reality, not only in the UK, like Norway, or like in countries that are, you know, some of them fully decarbonized, they have a very large number of electric vehicles. You see like the trend, we're actually moving towards people having different contracts. And that's another very big issue, is how do you design tariffs for consumers? So that, I think we're moving towards an era that you have to think about consumer tariff design and how you can, reliability is no longer like kind of a public good, and every consumer should be able to define what the reliability level is. That being said, because electricity is like a very unique sort of product, we have to take a look into like, you know, the more disadvantaged groups. So like, you know, in the extreme scenario, someone who cannot afford, as you said, we went through an energy crisis, you know, very high electricity prices. So someone who cannot afford to pay their bill could like opt out to kind of, you know, I'm going to sell disconnect. We don't want to avoid these sort of situations, obviously. So you need to think of the overall problem and how to protect the more disadvantaged customers and maybe give them some insurance for the first year until they get accommodated to these new kind of contracts.
Sounds like even though you're saying that it is starting to happen, it's a really big shift, both for consumers, the retail markets, the aggregators. So your paper, you've described bits of it to us, and I guess you propose a framework to incorporate these priority pricing contracts through an aggregator as a demand response. But as you've said, there are already burgeoning ideas of this. So how is what you propose in the paper novel? How is it sort of new? How difficult is it to implement in the UK or in other countries that you've looked at?
So our paper, like some key takeaway themes and the novelty of it is that we propose a way of how you can have a liftoff or residential demand response in the context of capacity markets. So what's the best way of incorporating demand response in capacity markets? Because so far it was being used on the supply side, whereas we think it's best to have it on the demand side. And the benefit of that is that then people can have the opportunity to express how much capacity they need. And the second is that we actually also propose several modifications to current capacity market regulations to make it more appropriate for like the future low carbon system to reflect the needs that we need. We need flexibility. How is that reflecting the capacity market? We need demand to play a very key role in future electricity market systems. How do you do that? So these are some questions we are giving an answer in our paper, potential answer to that. Obviously, we do recognize there are certain limitations, you know, of our work. And that is that, as you pointed out, it could be complex for some consumers, you know. So how do you actually tackle that? We do see in worldwide some kind of time varying tariffs. There are examples that, you know, Google has some like Wi-Fi thermostats, and then the consumers can remotely tune their heating. So that is also a form of demand response. But education, like consumer education, I would say is one of the key points. Demonstration of why like this would be good for them, for the system. You know, people are logical, like, you know, if you show them why this would be good, they would tend to comply with that. Maybe given them more security, like having a higher fixed tariff, but they know how much they pay, and the time varying part is a lesser component. So there have been studies to give us some guidelines of how this could be best implemented in reality.
Fascinating. I guess, you know, we look a lot at new facilities, new infrastructure, new supplies. And we don't, I think, as you point out, look enough at consumer choices, at demand behaviors that could be quite impactful in the way that electricity markets operate. Dimitra, that was really insightful. Thank you very much. I think that's kind of all we have time for today. Sounds like there's going to be plenty more for us to discuss in the future, plenty more papers and more research on this topic. Of course, as the energy transition continues, there will be more adaptation and more findings, and as well as more challenges that we will need to overcome. So I look forward to speaking to you again in the future. To our audience, I'd like to thank you very much for tuning in today. Dimitra's paper, as well as all of our research in our podcast, are available on our website. So we welcome your feedback and your thoughts, and we look forward to our next discussion.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.